Welcome back to the Mawa Distinct Show. I'm Shirley Nordrum.
And I'm Sharon Nordrum.
And today we're in Detroit Lakes visiting with Penny Kakagabe. Did I get it
good
right?
Good pronunciation. Nice.
It's such a pleasure to sit down and visit with you today. So it's springtime out there, and you and Rick just fed us the best meal I've
ever had. Oh, I'm so happy.
That was so good.
I've caught some stuff you guys talking about the Ojibwe test kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
So as we were preparing stuff, I was like, they've had better. Oh, this isn't going to be what I think it is. Like, you know, it's so we're putting it together, and I'm like, I hope they like it.
Oh. It was so good. I was wishing there were more people to share it. You know, like, this is so good, people. And it's all, you know, local harvested, healthy, you know, good things that you fed us. So
I'm glad you like
it. So you were out harvesting that stuff?
So, yeah, yesterday, in preparation for you coming over, we've been watching our basswood tree here in the front yard right here, and we can see that they're budding out and got some nice sized leaves on them. And I know that because we're living right in the middle of town, that this tree is a little further ahead than trees that we're finding out in the deep woods. So we went out a few miles west, northwest, and there's a little patch of U.S. Fish and Wildlife land. One of my concerns is access to public lands for harvesting. Right. So we're like constantly scouring places that feel good. They're not too many pesticides in the neighboring fields, you know, those kinds of things, and places where we feel safe to go in, where they're not going to be harassed. Right. So we went out there yesterday, and it was a rainy and cold day, but we still had fun being out there. We went and got the basswood buds, and we got the leaves that are about the size of a quarter. I like the taste of those, and about that size, so from the bud and then up to that. And then we were surprised while we were out there, we found that's an area where I like to gather nettles. We'll gather nettles and dry them. So we have nettles through the winter, and I'll put them in soups or wild rice or, you know, whatever. And it's just so easy to work with them when they're dried because you don't get that pickery feeling off of them anymore.
Right.
But we found them out there, and they're like, they're just like little and tender. And it's like, oh, this is going to be fabulous. And Rick was... And well, at first, the first ones we saw, we weren't going out there to get those, so we didn't have like our gloves or anything with us. And so we got out there, and I was like, "Hey!" So we went back to the truck and got our gloves and those and nippers and whatnot. Get further back in. There's like a field of them. It's like so many nettles.
Nice.
It's really nice. Yeah,
nice.
And the other thing I like about gathering nettles is they're a lot like if people think like taking the top off, and they're going to take an evergreen off of the top of a pine tree, how often they'll double up and they'll set up two tops off of that. I don't feel bad about taking off the nettles because I know they're just going to come back thicker, and I'm going to be back out there in maybe 4 weeks and gather again. It's going to be more fresh stuff. I found that with nettles, with sage. You know, there's a few plants that are like that. Not everybody, but there's some that are like that. I think we've had wild mint has been like that. We were gathering those nettles, and... Oh, Rick's going to have you do a taste test here. I think this is the nettle and sesame seed salt. It's a recipe I got from Becca Dallinger.
Okay.
And this is really nice. Oh, I shouldn't tell. You should tell me if you like it, if you think it's nice.
Mm-hmm. I can see seasoning things.
It goes on salads. It goes on eggs.
I was thinking on your meat.
Yep.
Just eat it right out of the jar, you know.
Yeah.
So what was that mix?
So it's... you take sesame seeds and toast them, and then
I could taste those.
Sea salt and dried nettles, and you throw it into a food processor. These ones, I'm not good at roasting, toasting, you know, any of that stuff. I put stuff on the stove and I walk away, and I wonder what that smell is. It's like, oh yeah, what was I doing over there? So we had black sesame seeds and white sesame seeds, and Rick was toasting them for me, and I think you said that you weren't sure if things were getting toasted because, you know, those black ones were confusing him. And so it got super toasted. And at one point I thought these were too dark toasted, but now I really like that flavor.
I like it's that smoky. Flavor. I knew that it was a little, probably for most people, too roasted.
Uh-huh.
But I like burnt food, actually.
Yeah, so do I.
So, you know.
The only reason you guys like burnt food is because you burn your food all the time.
He's required to burn my food now.
Those sausages you served us were really good, but they were almost on the verge of, and I'm like, wow, most people don't cook this good. Yeah, so that's a really good flavoring.
And yeah. The nettles, they're good for regulating blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about pulling people back from, you know, diabetes, but just as we go through our lives, it's how, you know, keep your blood sugar level and, you know, all that. It's just good iron. It's good. Nettles are just so beautiful.
Yeah.
But we were out there, and Rick was like, oh, you think these are, you know, they're so young, and they're so tender, and they're so pretty. You think they're still pickery? And I'm like, oh, maybe not. And I took my gloves off, and I'm like, nah, they're fine, they're fine. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're pickery still. Okay, yeah, I can feel. I put the gloves back on, and we were really excited to be able to get out there and get that fresh stuff for lunch today.
Yeah, oh, it's so delicious.
And then, and this is the first time we've served the basswood buds at a meal, because normally we can't get enough of them. We're just standing out in the woods eating them.
Everything that you can
there.
Reach, right?
Oh, and you should just, yeah, the ones out there, you could really tell the deer were hungry.
Yeah.
They really destroyed some of the ends of the branches. But what was interesting to me is, like, where they had bit back those branches, they're, like, coming in really thick with leaf buds.
Nice.
So, you know,
nature knows how to balance itself, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was happy to see that, you know, if they're not killing the tree by taking off of it,
we're not doing any damage.
People who aren't at all familiar with, you know, wild harvesting, I get this little sideways criticism about, you know, you're out there killing stuff, and it's like, I'm taking some leaf buds.
I wasn't breaking the branches.
Yeah. And my experience, you take leaf buds, they're going to send out more leaf buds. Mm-hmm. They're just going to keep producing more.
Yeah.
A tree needs to photosynthesize, and it knows what it needs to do to do that.
I will say there's a couple, you know, there's a few exceptions to that. There's just some things that I'm careful about how I harvest, because I know that that's going to do some damage to some certain evergreen trees.
Evergreen trees can be a little bit different than a deciduous tree, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you ever have honey that's just purely basswood?
Yes, I have had that.
Yeah.
It's got a different taste to it.
It does, very different.
It does.
I think it might be an acquired taste for some people, like, because they're used to honey.
Yeah.
You know, kind of tasting how honey tastes, but
it's not my favorite thing.
You don't. You were not.
I think it's a little sour.
Yeah.
You like it?
Yeah, I did. There's a guy that lives up by S Lake. It's north of Inger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Up that way, and he takes all his bees out to the basswoods, and then so he has pretty much purely basswood honey.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that there's some people that have an illness, and I can't remember what the illness is, but that's what they want, is basswood honey. And so he has a market for it based on that.
Yeah.
But he gave me a jar, and I was impressed with it.
Well, I've had some from some people from down in the state of Virginia.
Okay.
And that was basswood honey, and I liked the taste of that. But then we'd gotten some, we'll buy honey kind of in bulk from the Amish out by Monoman, and they weren't producing. They had gotten it from somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and that was too strong tasting.
So, maybe it's the time of year.
I know. Yeah.
You know, because you're looking at regions too.
Mm-hmm.
So when are the bees collecting that from the basswood in the state of Virginia, as opposed to over here?
Mm-hmm.
Are they collecting it at different times of the year?
Or
is this pure?
I think that stuff was coming from around Clarissa. And I don't know that it was
pure.
Just,
yeah. It could have been something else in it, because, you know, basswood flowers that they can actually get, you know, pollen and nectar and stuff from, mm-hmm. to make honey,
mm-hmm.
that's just a small window of time for us in the spring. So
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking if there's another source of something else somewhere,
they're gonna be commingling.
Yep,
their
it might
pollen.
Not be pure. So
you'll
never know which one you liked and which one you didn't like, because only the bee could tell us
exactly what was in there. Well, I'm interested in trying this stuff from up by Inger. That'd be interesting. And then be able to compare.
Weren't you saying one time you stopped at this place over by Stone Lake in Wisconsin, and they had cranberry?
They got a lot of cranberry bogs there.
Yeah?
And that's where they had cranberry honey.
Oh, did you buy some?
Really nice, yeah.
That sounds
really
good.
Nice.
And we've never run across it again.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
Sad.
Well, we're not over there as much.
Yeah.
So.
Well, did you look online for it, though?
Never did.
Find it online?
That's a good idea. Just to try.
I just had a honey guy at our Ziguan festival, and he had some really dark honey, and it was goldenrod. It was just strictly goldenrod. And I looked at it, But I remember that you had allergies. Goldenrod bothers you. And so I didn't buy it because I wanted to do a research and find out if goldenrod, I don't know if goldenrod still bothers you or not, because we don't have goldenrod in the yard like we used to. I had a cow.
It just made me sneeze. It wasn't like anything horrible, but I'm thinking if I ate the honey that I might not
have the
allergy.
I didn't know, so I was like, I told him, I said, I'm going to do some research before I buy this one. But I did buy one of his other honeys. It was just a wildflower honey.
But everything I've heard about honeys is that they're supposed to help improve people's, like, so allergies aren't as bad. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What other kind of things do you harvest? Are you the kind of person that just sits around and waits for spring to come?
She's pulling out the book.
She has a book.
So when I first started doing stuff, I was going to say about, the spring harvesting is really, Becca Dallinger came back from a farming conference and she'd said that the spring greens were important for transitioning into the summer heat, and we're not good at getting greens into our diet in general. So it's like, I felt like if we learn more about the spring greens, and that was always our harvesting in July and August and September is pretty heavy. So it's like, this would be, I'm itching to get out and go do something, but stuff isn't ready yet. So now I can be out harvesting the spring greens. And I noticed that we were out in the woods with my niece Fosse two summers ago. We didn't think it was hot out in the woods, and she was hot. We had to stop and come back into the house. And she was the one, she says, it's those spring greens. You guys are all acclimated to these temperatures now because of all the spring greens you ate this year, and she hadn't. So I'm kind of hoping that's the case, and that I don't do well in the summertime. The hot, muggy weather is hard on me. I have fibromyalgia, so it's just anything I can do to live more comfortably. But I want to learn more about the different spring greens that are available. Which things are easy to find. We talked about Wagoggins, the bracken fern. Mm-hmm. We're hoping those will be coming up pretty soon here. We're having such a late year, though. I don't know, how late do we think we are? We're thinking 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Sometimes, some things I think we're late a couple weeks by, and some things I think we're earlier than. So I'm confused by what I'm seeing out in the woods. Because, right now, I know that I want to be going out and getting morels. To me, it feels like it's that time that I need to be out there.
Yeah. I was looking for mushrooms yesterday. And I was like, what am I thinking? It's cold and wet out here. Why are there mushrooms?
They're tiny. They're up there about an inch. Oh. But I think ordinarily they'd be harvestable size. Now, I mean, you can eat them at that size, but why not let them grow and get a little bigger? As long as you know someone's not following you to steal your stash. And that has happened to me.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Well, last year at this time, you went on that mushroom walk, and it was a lot warmer.
Mushrooms are so powerful. Mushrooms are way more healing than most people realize. All of them.
I'm just starting to learn about them.
So obviously you must do wild onions.
If I get out, we don't have a great source for them right now. So Rick and Bert will go out and get wild onions. Mm-hmm. And they were... Were you guys gonna go do that pretty soon? Okay, so they got a spot. Bird showed Rick a spot for wild onions. Since we're living in Detroit Lakes, it's really this struggle with the public lands, where to go, where to find stuff. We'd found a spot that you could see from the road that there was a nice growth of sage, and it was some U.S. Fish and Wildlife land. So I was like, oh, today's the day. We're gonna go and check out that sage and get in there and. Parked the car and started walking in, and it was like, what's going on here? It looks like Jurassic Park. Everything you see is the gigantic version of it and the unusual coloring, and the thistles were monster thistles, and we took a broader look around where we were, and we were completely blocked in by big agriculture land, so it was just all the drift of all the chemicals in there, and there was a lot of sage in there, and we just backed out slowly. Hope we didn't touch anything, and kind of brushing ourselves off. And it's like creepy.
So you can buy seed for wild onion online. That might be if you find some location. So here's I've never put this on the radio before, but so if you want things like that that you can buy seed for or that you can transplant, know when is the right time to transplant.
Mm-hmm.
You can go seed a spot that you know it will grow. So you know they like maple, basswood, you know, sugarbush type heavier soils.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give it a try. Get yourself, use your phone or a GPS. Put that location in case you forget where you put them.
Go back and check it
out. And go back and check it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more disruption that's going on the earth, the more we're going to have to
be doing
the intermediaries and be doing some of that. So my nephew and I were out driving and we went by a sugar bush and he goes, look, that's kind of weird. There's no leaks in that sugar bush at all. So then we went back to a sugar bush in the fall where we knew there were leaks and we collected some seeds.
Oh,
and
nice.
We went to that other one and we put them out and we said, let's just see if this works. We're experimenting around a little bit. So he and I need to go back there this spring and see if anything happened from that or not.
It might take a couple of years.
It
too.
Could. Oh, sure. It could.
Sure. Yeah. So what you're talking about is something we're kind of doing a little bit of because this place that's I was talking about that's northwest of town here where we got the nettles and the basswood buds. What it is it was somebody's farm and the old building site, and they donated it to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is what I heard in their will. And so there's stuff that's creeping back in, you know, so there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, whatever. But in my drying room, every year I go through and I, you know, clean off all the counters and I sweep up everything off the floor, and all of those seeds from all the other stuff I gather from other places, I've been taking it out there and throwing it around and just letting it see.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Who's going to grab a hold and this is going to be the place where they want to be now.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That is.
Because I, oh my gosh, being able to drive 5 miles here is so much easier for me than to, you know, trucking an hour north every time I need some little thing.
This is one thing that's happened on the East Coast anyway is that ramps or leeks or wild onions, however you want to talk about them, are such a delicacy that they make, the harvesters, wild harvesters, make so much money off them because they get like $20 for a pound of onions. So people are like digging them up over harvesting them. And I noticed this is happening here with the increase in wild harvesters over harvesting too, that I think we're going to have to do some of this stuff. If we want to wild harvest and we want to keep doing this, then we all have to become participants in making sure that that's getting back out there. And how do we do that?
And I think that there should be like workshops or something at the beginning, like in March sometime. This is how we need to take care of the forest. It's great you guys want to harvest, love it that you want to eat healthy, but we need to make sure that it's going to be there for generations.
Right
Put it out there that way.
It's called an unintended consequence of,
you
know, you just don't know what you don't know until you start doing stuff. So that's, you know, and I was going to share with you that because I really like the indigenous knowledge, I prefer that, but I also, I have a biology degree,
Yeah.
And so talking about those ramps in that summertime thing, I was always told that those get you ready for summer.
Okay.
And so I just recently found in the literature, the scientific literature, that those ramps, which they haven't been researching on until they became so popular in the East, actually increase your own antihistamine resistance to pollen. When they talk about it getting you ready for the summer, they're talking about you not having allergies. You know, it wasn't like, you know, that's what I love about our way of knowing is like, you had to figure it out yourself, how this helps you. It wasn't like, okay, you do this and this will happen. You know, like the Western
It's not
side.
Like pulling the book off the shelf. And
exactly.
Like, what do they call it? The physician's reference?
Like, if you have issues with allergies, you know, that may be something that's going to help you.
Well, and I was also going to say, it's like, you know, perhaps there would be less over-harvesting if we had people learning one-on-one more, but that's not always, I'm not always able to wait until I find that one person that I can sit down and talk to and learn from, pass tobacco and gift up appropriately, you know, to learn everything that I need to know. That is my preference for learning. There was a thing around Ogama a couple years ago. Somebody talked to me about the bergamot being over harvested over there, because it was there was a company that was making a bergamot salad dressing, so people were being paid to bring it in.
Yep. As soon as money is involved,
yeah, things just go nuts.
Things go crazy.
Yeah.
That's what happened to a lot of the birch, because I don't know if you've ever been to a hotel or a mall cut the little birch and put it for a decoration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were in our area about 20 years ago, and they were paying per stick for the birch. Mm-hmm. And there were some people that were just out over-harvesting. Well, so that birch was probably 3 years old when they caught it. That's a 23-year-old tree now. And now our birch that we're are kind of getting to the, it's a kind of a short-lived tree for the most part. And so they're like at the end of there, and then we don't have no new ones in between because people over-harvested. And that, like you say, that was that worth? You know, what did they make off that? $200
Yeah. Do you realize what you've done? Uh-huh. Do you need to stop? Let's have a moratorium on no more birch decorating. You want to have birch decoration by a basket and hang it up, you know? I wanted to talk about one other thing, too, though. I've had a lot of teachers. I've had a lot of teachers that have been people that I've learned on with, you know, one-on-one, gone out in the woods with and harvested, you know, passed tobacco and gifted them to teach me about various things. And then I've had other teachers that weren't like that. But one of the things I want to talk about is a very good friend of mine, Becca Dallinger at the White Earth Extension. Her and I, we share back and forth with each other. And one of the things that she told me early on was to start a journal for my gathering. And it's been the best tool I have, because it's like, where did we find that? When did we find that? There's little maps for where that was and where this is. And now we've gotten into where we're like, hey, now that we're out in the woods, we were out. This hasn't gotten in the book yet. This is supposed to be in the book from May 11th. And we were like, hey, look at that. There's juniper here. There's balsam here. There's some kind of scruffy looking birch here. There, I see pussy willow, I see white pine, there's a good canoe access, you know, and it's a flowering red maples out there. And because a lot of times we're like, we don't know that we need balsam, but then when somebody's saying, hey, do you know where I can find some balsam? I need it for medicine. I'm going, I know I've seen it around. I couldn't say exactly where. But now since we've been doing this for about 2 years now, where it's like we're writing down what we see while we're out doing other things.
And that is a brilliant idea.
That is.
Because I know two places in this book now where I know where there's really beautiful balsam for, and it's just the right size that people have described to me for the medicine that they need.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, I think the one, we were really happy last July. We had to buy a different vehicle because the vehicle we had was going down. And one of our requirements for this blazer that we got was that it had to be able, we liked going out in the woods, and at least once a summer with Betsy May to go get some birch bark. And one of the requirements is that it has to be able to go down a four-wheel trailer, because that's where Betsy May wants to drive down. She's like, turn off there! And it's, you're going down this little bitty four-wheel trailer that nothing else is going to make it down there and back again, because you can't drive, you can't turn around, you just got to back out. But down that little four-wheel trailer is the most beautiful balsam that I've ever seen. I'm sure a lot of our balsam is gone from people getting it for wreaths.
Yes.
And but when you need, that's exactly the kind you need for this medicine that this person was looking for. And now I know where, nobody else knows where to find it.
Yeah.
But, so if anybody needs that balsam, no.
Oh, we will go and get it for you. We're not going to tell you where it's at.
No. They didn't see me leaning into the microphone there with that one. So...
Stupid. I just want to thank you so much for sitting down with us and visiting.
Oh, this is a lot of fun.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.